Ladies and gentlemen, this is Killer Cross. Please do not notify the police. Your signal has been interrupted. You are now listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420. Tuck your chin, please, sir. Thank you.
Wow, what a fantastic gift.
I realize the title of your show, Rock and Wrestling Local 420. And I'm going to take that idea and go extreme.
Alrighty then, this is Phil Nershey of the String Cheese Incident coming to you from up in the Windy Mountain. I'm here joining Cosmic Chris on the Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
This is the big ugly J.D. Bishop, and if you're not listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420, you must be stupid!
Hey dear radio buddies, it's me, Max Volume. You are listening to Rock and Wrestling and Local 420 with Cosmic Chris.
Hey, this is Chad of the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling Podcast. When you're done listening to my show, head on over and listen to the Rock and Wrestling Local 420, and I guarantee you will not be disappointed.
Hey, folks, I got a name for you, one of your greatest podcasts in podcasts alive today. They don't call you a great podcast. They call you Rock and Wrestling in Local 420. Beat it if you can.
Okay. I'm actually using matches to light my bowl right now because our lighters don't work. So that's what that was. Oh my god. Whew. Episode 152 of the greatest podcast in the world, Rock and Wrestling Local 420. I am your host, as always, Cosmic Chris. Thank you for being with us this week. And we got a lot to talk about in the news world. Not a whole lot to talk about in wrestling. There are some things I do want to get to in our second segment. But as far as segment one, the music segment, God, there's so much shit. There are a few deaths that I want to talk about. First off, reggae superstar Toots Hibbert from Toots and the Maytals has died at age 77, apparently from COVID. So, dude, Toots and the Maytals, man, he's probably the biggest thing outside of Bob Marley, you know? So he was so awesome. I've seen Toots and the Maytals a few times growing up as a kid. I think the first time I saw him, I was probably like 16 or 17 here in Reno. And man, so many memories. We also got Ronald Bell, one of the two brothers from Kool and the Gang. No, not Kool, but the other guy that started Kool and the Gang. Died a few days ago. And yeah, I mean, Kool and the Gang, what can you say about Kool and the Gang, man? You can say, hey, the cheesy shit from the 80s, Joanna, and She's Fresh, and Celebrate, but the 70s Kool and the Gang, which is Kool and his brother with, you know, Jungle Boogie. Woo, Jungle Boogie. I mean, dude, it's a fucking amazing song. So, yeah, that's another one that will be missed. This is another one that kind of hit home. Anyone that watched the 60s TV show The Avengers, Emma Peel, actress Diana Rigg, also died. And, you know, for a lot of people, she was one of the first crushes of a lot of people. She was a little bit before my time, but, you know, I saw The Avengers because, you know, syndication in the 70s and 80s. But, yeah, I mean, and the deaths aren't over. Get this. Now, I will admit, I've never actually heard of this band. But, you know, I got a report on it. It's on Loudwire, and it is a death, so a band called Iron Age, their guitarist Wade Allison has died. I have no idea how. I didn't read the article, but for Iron Age fans, I'm sure he'll be missed. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least mention it. Just because I don't know who the band is doesn't mean a million other people doesn't know, you know? So I wanted to show a little bit of respect and show proper homage to Wade Allison from Iron Age. Now, in other news, I don't really get it. I've looked over this article a few times, and maybe because I'm not good with understanding ways things are written, Facebook, Zuckerberg, has just put out this new rule with music and Facebook and videos and stuff, and a lot of people are pissed. Like, a lot of people are just deleting their accounts because it's a good way to advertise for music. And it says something like, you may not use videos on our products to create a music listening experience. So I don't really get that. I mean, so what? I can't go to a concert now and go live on Facebook or something like I used to? Or, you know, that's where I don't really understand. And it takes a little bit of reading. I mean, basically it says under this rule, it would appear that something as innoxious as a band uploading their own music video natively to Facebook would result in a penalty. Facebook also owns Instagram through similar rule has been enacted on Instagram at this time. So I just don't, and there's a clarification. That's the other thing. And I don't really get the clarification part. It says, clarified their guidelines for using music in the video. So, it says, we want to encourage musical expression on our platforms while also ensuring that we would uphold our agreements with our right holders. These agreements help protect the artists, the songwriters, who are the cornerstone of the music community. And it goes on, yada, yada, yada. The greater number of full-length recorded tracks in a video, the more likely it may be limited. So, long videos are, you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand. Even though it's saying it's clarifying, I'm not understanding it. Maybe it's because I'm not a musician or anything like that. So, I mean, I don't know. Because, you know, there's a huge list of bands that are coming out with new live streams and shit like this. So, I mean, I don't really get it, man. And maybe I'm not supposed to understand it. Wow, here's another one that I did not realize. 12 years ago, Metallica released Death Magnetic. I had no idea it was 12 years ago. I mean, well, I know in the early 2000s, like 2002, 2003 was when Saint Anger came out. I guess the new one is hardwired to self-destruct. I mean, I just thought Death Magnetic came out in like the early 2010s or something, like the teens. I don't know, man. Just does not seem like 2008 Death Magnetic came out. I mean, I remember the video and everything that they had that was famous, that was really good. But it just does not seem like 12 years ago. That's for damn sure. Also, 25 years ago, the Red Hot Chili Peppers released One Hot Minute, which was the first album without John Frusciante and the only album with Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction. So, I mean, he was only on there for one album, and then he left, and I think they brought Frusciante back, and then that young kid came in, or maybe he came in, and then Frusciante came back after him, but either way, Frusciante's been in and out of the band for 30 years, so. But, yeah, One Hot Minute, I remember Aeroplane, Warped. There's a few good songs on there, man. I mean, it definitely was darker. It wasn't just the fun-loving Red Hot Chili Peppers. It definitely was more James Addiction, like, that's for damn sure. He definitely changed the whole aspect of the band, as far as I was concerned. And I liked it. There's also a video of Jason Momoa jamming with Les Claypool, and Les is showing him how to play My Name is Mud. That's kind of interesting. I guess Jason Momoa has a lot of musician friends. We also have the fifth season of Sammy Hagar's show Rock and Roll Road Trip. That's going to have a bunch of people on it. So I'm thinking they're doing like South Park does. They film half the season in like the spring, and then the other half into the fall, into the winter. That's how South Park usually does it. I'm assuming that's how Sammy Hagar's doing it. I've loved the show since day one. I mean, I think it was the first episode that had Bobby and Mickey on it, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sammy Hagar's Road Trip, but can't watch it because I don't have access anymore. Man. There's also an interesting video of Ace Frehley talking about how when he first met Bob Kulick, and him basically saying how intimidated he was at how great of a guitar player Bob Kulick was. So, yeah, man. That's... Anytime... That's what I've noticed about Ace Frehley. Anytime he talks about somebody, he always puts them over, man. And it's always cool when you put people over. So, let's see what's next. So, Quiet Riot will be going on. It says... Quiet Riot guitarist Alex Grossi has thanked fans for their support following the announcement that the band was planning to carry on after drummer Frankie Benali's death. So they got a new drummer, John Kelly from Danzig and Typo Negative, will be taking his place, apparently. So, man, it's... The thing is this is the first real band to, okay, I guess continue without the original members, because Foreigner, at least Lou Gramm and Mick Jones are alive. Even though they don't tour with the band, they're still alive. Without Kevin DeBrow and Frankie Benali, yes, you had Rudy Sarzo, yes, you had Carlos Carvaza, but... Dude, Frankie and Kevin were the band, and without them, it's really going to be hard to see a band that, I mean, yeah, you could probably have Rudy sit in and first show, and it might rock, you know, totally have Carlos Carvaza, but if they were going to continue, in my eyes, I would much rather like to see Carlos and Rudy... than a bunch of people that were never really in the band. I know what... The thing is the guy that's on bass, Alex Grossi, or not the Alex Grossi, but the other guy, if I'm not mistaken, was in the band before Rudy. So I think he might be, if not a founding member, a pre-classic lineup member, because it's his bass that's actually mostly on Metal Health. When Rudy joined the band, Metal Health was pretty much already done for the most part, except when they did come on Field of Noise, I think. But, like, Slick Black Cadillac, all that shit, like, Slick Black Cadillac is on an album even before that. The two albums that Randy Rhoads did with them, Slick Black Cadillac is on one of those albums. So, I don't know, it's just... It's kind of bittersweet for me, you know. That's just what I think, because I loved Quiet Riot. Also, before I forget, I got to say, I was listening to Max Volume's Big Hairy Library earlier tonight, and he played Bruce Springsteen's new song. It's by the album of the same name, Letter to You. And I got to admit, I really liked it. It sounded like the Bruce Springsteen that I want to hear. I wasn't the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan, but the shit I like is Hungry Heart, Glory Days, stuff like that. You know, I mean, to me, I mean, I wasn't that into the Born to Run and all the 70s shit. I like the early 80s shit, and that's the Bruce Springsteen that I grew up on. And that's what it sounded like to me, you know? So I gotta give him credit. That Letter to You song is fucking amazing. And finally, we have Dave Mustaine's 10 favorite albums. Now, these are all albums that Dave Mustaine has grown up on and loved. And it says number 1 or number 10. It's not in any real order. It doesn't say 1 through 10. But Changes Bowie was the first album he ever bought. UFO Phenomenon reminds him of high school. Led Zeppelin's Presence, favorite album of all time, apparently. Judas Priest's Sad Wings of Destiny, the album that defines metal. And I gotta say, I agree. I have a picture disc on my wall as we speak, and I am looking at the most awesome. It's also the very first album. It's the second album, but it's the first album that actually features the trident, the Ankh trident thing that they have on every album. It's not on Rock and Rolla, but it is on Sad Wings and every album since. So, yeah, great album. Motorhead, Ace of Spades, the album that makes him want to break the speed limit. That is kind of funny, yeah, because that is probably one of the fastest albums. D-D-D-D, Ace of Spades. I mean, that's a great album, man. And that's another one. I got a picture disc right there next to Sad Wings of Destiny, ironically. Oh, my God. And right next to that, Metal Health, right up on my wall. So, Sad Wings of Destiny, Metal Health, Ace of Spades, right there. I'm just looking at. That's fucking amazing. And then, I don't know who this is. Aztec Camera. The album is called Love, the album that nobody believes I own. It's not that I don't believe it. I just don't know who the fuck they are, so... Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, favorite artwork. I mean, I guess it's got good artwork. There's some artwork in it. Yeah, that's definitely cool. But, let's see here. Angel, their self-titled debut, Angel, most underrated album of all time. I gotta admit, I love Angel. Every album they did. I think they did a couple at least. But yeah, man, Angel is fucking amazing. Johnny Winter, Still Alive and Well, the album to play at his funeral, apparently. That's pretty cool. And then finally, Megadeth, Dystopia, the album I want to be remembered for. And I don't know, I can't name you one song of Dystopia, you know, it's weird, you know, and I've heard the album, I've listened to it, but if I was Megadeth, I'd want to be remembered for Rust in Peace, bar none, period. That would be the album I'd want to be. Symphony of Destruction was cool, probably their biggest album ever, but Rust in Peace, to me, is the definitive, it's the master of puppets, you know. Well, you know what it is? No, because equally, the way they do it is... I'd have to line them up perfectly. Okay, so Peace Sells, to me, is their master of puppets. And Rust in Peace is the first one they really went commercial with. Peace Sells was their first commercial hit, definitely. But, Rust in Peace was their Justice for All because Symphony was their Black album. And, if I was going to be proud of anything in my repertoire as far as Megadeth, it would definitely be Rust in Peace, because to me, that is the defining Megadeth album. If somebody asked me about Megadeth, what album should a kid listen to, the first thing I'd give them is fucking Rust in Peace, hands down. Actually, you know what I just noticed, looking at the Quiet Riot thing, is Kelly Garney was the bass player before Rudy Sarzo. Rudy Sarzo actually joined the band in 78 before Frankie Benali. So he's closer to an original member than Frankie, because Frankie started in 1982 as well as Carlos, because that's when the band was reformed. But Rudy played with them, you know, even when Randy Rhodes was in the band. That's why Randy and Rudy were in Ozzy's band. But the bass player that I was talking about was, Chuck Wright. Yeah, he's been in the band pretty much. He replaced Rudy in 85. So, yeah. I mean, I do know that, like I said, I know on the album Metal Health that a lot of them are one of the other bass players. I can't remember who. I don't know if it's Kelly Garney or if it's the other guy. But either way, man, I'm going to miss Frankie Benelli. And, yeah. So, one thing before I get to my second segment. I had a meeting with Xander today. Here, hold on real quick. Flip split persona. We went out and had coffee, and we're going to actually lock down in the next week or two this interview that I'm going to bring you, which I'm going to try and record audio and video from the vault of Bizarre Guitar, Greg Golden's famous fucking guitar shop that's been here as long as I've been alive. Like, literally. In fact, it's a year older than I am. So it's 46 years that Greg has already started in 74. So look forward to that interview with Split Persona coming out of the vault from Bizarre Guitar. So let's take a quick pause for the cause, and I'll talk to you when we get back from the break.
Hey, this is Kevin Kleinrock from Masked Republic and the Keeping It 100 with Conan podcast, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420. Make sure you tune in every week.
Hey, it's Pat Kelly of the West Coast Wrestling Connection and the Golf Guys Radio Show, and you're listening to my buddy, Cosmic Chris, Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
Hey, everybody, this is Radical Russ Belleville, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420, Union Proud.
This is Hotshot Danny Duggan, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling Local 420.
Hey, folks, let me tell you about DDP Yoga. At a time in my life not so long ago, I was suffering from Hep C as well as diabetes and well over 300 pounds. And a friend of mine sent me a YouTube video of this man, Arthur Borman. He was a paratrooper that had been told he would never walk again without the use of crutches. He gave DDP Yoga a try and is now one of DDP's leading success stories, as well as helping such people as Scott Hall, Chris Jericho, Gabriel Iglesias, Corey Taylor, Jake the Snake Roberts, Stevie Richards, and countless others. Diamond Dallas Page originally developed DDP Yoga for athletes such as himself who had suffered years of injury due to high-impact sports. When he ruptured his L4 and L5 spinal discs during the height of his professional wrestling career, he was so desperate to keep his childhood dream alive that he was willing to try anything. So he tried yoga for the first time. I know firsthand the benefits that DDP Yoga has to offer. Because Dallas had experience in many forms of fitness, he quickly learned how different yoga was from other traditional workouts. Soon, he started mixing elements of yoga with his rehab as well as traditional workout principles. For almost a decade, he has refined his program and has become a master at teaching it to others. DDP has saved my life. I encourage you to buy the discs as I have. Go to ddpyoga.com or you can download the DDP Yoga Now app. You can do it anywhere you want. He has cooking segments, live daily workout segments. I encourage you to check it out. Start living a healthier life. And hey, this ain't your mama's yoga.
C. D. F. 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 3 weeks we've been talking about the Platt Amendment. What are you people? On dope?
Oh, man. Wow. We are back from the break. So, we're going to talk a little bit about wrestling. Now, as far as Raw is concerned, Raw opened up with basically Randy Orton noting the more times he comes into contact with Keith Lee, the more likely Lee will get punted because of the way he's been punting people lately. And that's exactly what I'm worried about. WWE books Drew McIntyre so strongly that it felt like he couldn't even get his revenge fast enough. You know, and Adam Pearce's gimmick is basically that he's Barney Fife and he doesn't even realize it. It started out that he's cutting this promo and then the siren comes in and Drew McIntyre comes in and they have words and fisticuffs and all that stuff, and then it's going to lead into another match later. Let's see, the Hurt Business defeats Apollo Crews, Ricochet, and Cedric the Entertainer. And basically, Cedric the Entertainer ends up, like, turning on him and going to the Hurt Business, the Hurt Locker Business, or whatever it's fucking called. After getting beat up week after week, WWE finally threw a bone. Cedric Alexander, as I always say, Cedric the Entertainer, basically turned him heel, you know? And he, after getting beaten up again and again, finally he's like, you know what? I'm going to join these guys. If he can't beat him, join him, you know? It wasn't all the way confirmed that Cedric is now a part of the Hurt Business, but, you know, that's the way it's looking. And then now there's a new logo for Retribution, apparently. And let's see here. The Street Profits, Andrade and Angel Garza. And then, basically, they're trying to split up a bunch of people. They're trying to split up Andrade and Garza, which, who didn't see that coming? I said this a year ago. 6 months to a year ago, I was like, okay, here's what they're going to do. They're going to fight over Selena Vega and all that stuff. And it's just showing that Andrade and Angel Garza's tensions have been fleeting and meaningless. But, you know, it is what it is, because that's what they're doing. They're also doing the same thing with the Colonics. But, so now there's the Colonics are turning on each other. And so Peyton Royce's theme music was awful, and I was shocked that the video was also awful. I mean, I don't know. It just, it is what it is. See, that's the thing, dude. I talk shit about the Colonics, but I like them after the last year, or been about a year and a half, probably, since they joined the main roster, a year to a year and a half. At least a year. I mean, at least a year. So, let's see. And then, apparently, there's going to be a street fight for Dominic and Buddy Murphy. Let's see, the Mysterio family has basically become a staple on WWE programming. Let the record state that Dominic Mysterio threatened to take Murphy's last breath from him during the otherwise solid babyface promo. So, I mean, Asuka and Mickey James defeat Lana and Natalya in a tag team match. I mean, I don't know. I don't see why Natalya and Lana can't call themselves the New Heart Foundation, given how they coordinate their gear, because that's how they look. So, Asuka and Mickey James could be the best match at a Clash of the Champions if they get the time, anyway. Then next, we got the Hurt Business defeating the Viking Raiders, Ricochet, and Apollo Crews. Basically, by now in the program, Cedric the Entertainer is now a full-on member of the Hurt Business, but not without surveillance from Shelton Benjamin. The Hurt Business is slowly becoming OP in WWE, and I love to see it. You know, when these dudes are going to storm the world title picture again, dude, it's going to be fucking amazing. Then Randy Orton defeating Keith Lee by disqualification. And then, let's see, basically says here, WWE thinks it's protecting Keith Lee by using all these bells and whistles to keep him from getting pinned. That's pretty funny. But more times he disappears in his own match, only to be saved by Drew McIntyre. The more it makes him come off as an overmatched rookie who can't fight his own battles. That's for sure. Definitely. Okay, the Riot Squad defeats Shayna Baszler. And Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax have a lot of potential as an odd couple. But they can only get away with this wackiness if they're protected as monsters in the ring, which did not happen at all here with Shayna Baszler. It just, man, it just, I don't know, man. Hopefully when Riot Squad takes on Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, they'll continue the theme of either Shayna or Nia beating both Riot Squad members by herself. So Nia Jax battles the Riot Squad to a no contest, and then Retribution speaks out. Let's see, it appears as if the man speaking on behalf of Retribution was Dominik Dijakovic, but his voice was too disguised, which would actually help the presentation, if you ask me. Given the fact that Retribution essentially came in peace this week and only made an announcement, there's no reason this match couldn't have been restarted. Now, one thing I want to say about Retribution is I noticed that Wade Barrett was commentating a couple weeks ago on NXT. And this is totally, like my nephew said, this is totally Nexus all over again. I think it'd be cool if basically Retribution was a bunch of fucking NXT jobbers that got fired and they're coming back pissed off. And it would be kind of cool if Wade Barrett was the leader, I think. So, I don't know. That's just my opinion. But Kevin Owens battles Aleister Black to a no contest at Raw Underground, and man, I don't know, dude. I'm not into this Raw Underground thing as much as everyone else is. I'm not seeing any real entertainment value in it, to me anyway. And then I mean, dude, it's just not very entertaining as far as I'm concerned. Then there's basically a Claymore update with Randy Orton. And Randy Orton was Claymore kicked a third time, and Adam Pearce had to be seen again, had to see an ambulance off for about the 123rd time in WWE history. So that just basically was a little between matches kind of thing, you know. And then next thing you know, this was a 4-on-1 match with the heel outnumbered. By the end of the first commercial break, I found myself pulling for Buddy Murphy. Not only has the Mysterio family formed something of a stable, by the end of the night it came off as a total heel stable, with their four family members brutally beating poor Murphy with a kendo stick, when Rollins is the man who deserves to be the type of the onslaught. And I don't know, I just was like, they fucked Murphy up. All in all, like I said, every week, I mean, there are some entertaining things in Raw, but like I said, I keep saying it every week, SmackDown is definitely a superior and far better show in my eyes. So we're going to get into SmackDown, then I'll talk a little bit about AEW, and then close it with whatever I see online with Impact. So basically, SmackDown featured a follow-up from Bayley's brutal assault on Sasha Banks last week. That's another thing. People are just turning on motherfuckers right and left. In addition to Roman Reigns' first match on SmackDown in 7 months, Reigns teamed with Jey Uso to take on King Corbin and Sheamus in the main event. That was good. So, you know, I mean, they basically went to that, and then they also debuted a new character in Firefly Funhouse, Wobbly Walrus, and they had this Vince McMahon devil puppet, basically, and I think Wobbly Walrus is supposed to be a take on, like, Paul Heyman or something like that. While Alexa Bliss basically continues to descend into madness as she delivered a Sister Abigail to Nikki Cross. So, I mean, like I said, by far enjoy SmackDown more. And everyone knows Roman Reigns is setting up to turn on Jey Uso permanently. You know, I mean, it's just funny that I don't think Jey Uso sees it coming, and you know that's what's going to happen, and he's basically telling him that. And then Paul Heyman calling Roman Reigns the tribal chief is going to lead to a ton of t-shirt sales in the future. And let's see, AJ Styles defeats Jeff Hardy by DQ. Jeff Hardy went patriotic with his face paint, with SmackDown taking place on September 11th, mind you. AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy were well on their way to having one hell of a match before Sami Zayn interrupted. What a savvy heel move. Sami fake belt will not allow an Intercontinental Championship match to commence under his watch, and I hope he eventually wins it back. Because they keep trying to shoo him off the stage, and just, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I am pulling for Sami Zayn at this point. So, then there's problems, you know, with Lucha House Party, and they end up defeating Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro because of interference and shit like that. Your classic fucking something happens. Cesaro and Shinsuke basically allowed the Street Profits to hang out in their locker room during their match and got exactly what they paid for. Basically, they're in the match. And then Shinsuke looks up, and on the screen is the Street Profits basically partying. And then while they're all being distracted, Cesaro gets rolled up on. And so, I mean, but they're still showing the signs of cracking with Lucha House Party. After cutting her hair short, turning heel for the first, or heel the first time, I'm surprised Bayley didn't shave her head bald for her latest heel turn. That's funny. The canned heat for the segment was very loud, further indicating how invested WWE is in this storyline. Let's see here. Alexa Bliss versus Lacey Evans, Nikki Cross, and Tamina. Fatal 4-Way. Every second Alexa Bliss is on camera, I'm expecting an exorcism at this point. These feel like the last days we've all been seeing Alexa Bliss in her traditional ring gear. But they are kind of... See, that's the thing, because they got to make her kind of look... Because she's going for the Harley Quinn look, but she's also got to rosemary it up. You know, she's got to start looking fucking freaky if they're going to do this. And so basically, you know, she just basically... And she does a Sister Abigail, which was I thought was cool. So it's definitely going to be some weird storyline with the whole Bray Wyatt thing. And basically, it feels like Nikki Cross has been number one contender for the SmackDown Women's Championship more times than even Charlotte has won it. So then there's a match with Otis versus John Morrison. John Morrison is so great at comedy, but as a heel, Slater told me WWE tends to pigeonhole those types. Heath Slater is what the thing says. John Morrison stole the money in the bank briefcase last week, only to find out Otis switched the contract to his lunchbox. Well, this week, Miz had the opportunity to steal both, and he foolishly only stole the lunchbox. Well, actually, that was really enjoyable, and I enjoyed that, because basically Otis was thinking about it again, and he didn't get the... He had the real lunchbox, which had the WWE contract on it. And then, like I said earlier, Wobbly Walrus debuts on Bray Wyatt's Firefly Funhouse, which I definitely enjoyed, but I would have enjoyed them saying something about Alexa Bliss. But it was just weird. The segment featured a nice touch where there was a handmade welcome with the letters drawn in blood. At one point, the satanic Vince McMahon puppet said, "What in my name is going on here?" And the best part of Wobbly Walrus is it's a clear rib on Paul Heyman. You know, the whole whimsical music and everything, it was just fucking funny, dude. And you could tell. But they didn't mention Alexa Bliss, and that kind of pissed me off. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso versus King Corbin and Sheamus. And then basically Roman Reigns was once again conspicuous by his absence. His next t-shirt should read, "I'll play when I want to play." And this was basically, you know, it was so weird because by the end of the match, Jey Uso holds up Roman Reigns' hand with the belt and all that, and he looks at him like, "What the fuck, dude? Why you grabbing my hand?" And I mean, it's obvious that Roman Reigns, you know, is, like I said, going to turn on his cousin, so it just sucks. But I am going to enjoy the match with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, especially because they're not going to push Roman like this. He's going to keep the belt. It just would be kind of cool if somehow Jey Uso won the belt, and then now that heel Roman Reigns, he's just pissed off, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I just see good things are coming, I think. So a few things have happened in AEW. Dynamite featured the debut of Rusev, who resurfaced as Miro, which Miroslava is his name anyway, so he's just going by his name, Miro, and was revealed to be Kip Sabian's best man. I'll get to that story here in a little bit. I think it's fucking funny, actually. Dynamite also saw the continued breakup of the Elite, as the Young Bucks were fined $5,000 apiece for super kicking backstage interviewer Alex Marvez. So the main event saw Brody Lee defeating Dustin Rhodes to retain the AEW TNT Championship. Okay, let's see. Boom, 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 boom. Let's see. As I scroll down this real quick. Oh, yeah, it also had a match, the Jurassic Express defeating the Lucha Brothers. And there's been a lot of tensions with the Lucha Brothers, man. Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix are not happy with each other. I was shocked to see Jungle Boy get pinfall victory over Pentagon Jr. until I realized AEW really hasn't done much with the Lucha Brothers since they arrived. You know, they haven't really outside. There's this whole new thing with the Hernandez recruiting the Bunny Squad without Bunny, mind you, and the Lucha Brothers. And so now they're going around as their own little five-man faction, and Hernandez is the leader. Basically, the way Eddie Kingston forced the Lucha Brothers to shake hands is the exact same way my dad used to make me and my brother and I make up when we fought as kids. Let's see, and then Matt Hardy appears live. Matt Hardy received a hero's welcome and tackled the elephant in the room with his wife Rebby in the crowd. I don't know who Matt Hardy will be feuding with next, but I hope it isn't Sammy Guevara, even if they are tied at one match apiece. This feud has been filled with legit injuries and maybe cursed. because that's how it's looking, man. They just, each one of them keep getting hurt. And there's this whole debacle about, was Matt Hardy actually concussed? So it's really weird. Then Orange Cassidy defeats Angelico. Let's see, after that, like I said, Rusev debuts in AEW as Kip Sabian's best man. So basically what had happened is the segment had a couple of false starts with Puff and with Brian Pillman Jr. falsely revealed as the best man. So he's going to reveal the best man. Next thing you know, fucking Brian Pillman Jr. comes out, and then he basically tells him, like, dude, you're not the best man, dude. And then that's when Rusev comes out, and he says this thing about online gaming. And then Chris Jericho and Jake Hagar defeat Sonny Kiss and Joey Janela. Chris Jericho has spent so much time putting over Orange Cassidy, I believe Sonny Kiss and Joey Janela had a chance in this one. If Chris Jericho and Jake Hagar don't win the AEW World Tag Team Champions, they likely won't, with FTR protecting for a long run. They'll probably break up, too. FTR appears after that. FTR has mastered the art of being unlikable heels, even when they were technically babyfaces. Chris Jericho declared that he wants a shot at the World Tag Team Championships, but him and Hagar will likely have to wait their turn behind Jurassic Express. That's how loaded this division is. Then there's Gyla Rose defeats, I say Tay Conti, which I have no idea who the fuck it is, but apparently it's Ty Conti. And no disrespect to Nyla Rose. I'm just, ribbing her, because like I said, I'm bisexual, so I fucking can say whatever I want as far as whatever I want. It's no big deal. I'm not trying to insult her. I just think it's fucking funny. It's just like when I say Cedric the Entertainer. So I know it's Cedric Alexander. So let's see. Ricky Starks' Darby Allin bit should be a weekly occurrence for at least two more weeks. Ty Conte appeared to join the Dark Order, apparently, last time we saw her, but you'd never know it by her debut. Even more bizarre is Sheeta saved Conte from the further beatdown, not the Dark Order. Brody Lee defeats Dustin Rhodes in the main event, and I think that they should just have Dustin Rhodes come out in all gold and be Gold Dust. Don't call him Gold Dust. I just think it's funny. Why not? He can do it. You want to go back far, come back out of Seven. But he hated that gimmick altogether. That's why he went back to WWE. So, but that's pretty much it for AEW. It was all right. Nothing to write home about, but yeah, it's still looking good with the fans in the stands and all that shit. Yeah, I'm having fun still. Not as much fun as SmackDown, but having fun. On to Impact. Impact Wrestling was bookended by world champion Eric Young, who kicked off the show and went to face Tommy Dreamer in a non-title main event. Impact also featured an Impact Tag Team Championship match between Motor City Machine Guns and the Rascals. Ooh, that sounds interesting. Let's see. Opening segment featured Eric Young, Tommy Dreamer, and Alicia Edwards. Ooh, wow, that's kind of cool. Let's see. Alicia Edwards tried to guilt trip Eric Young, but telling a man known as the World Class Maniac that he's the reason her husband can't hold his kids is one of the biggest compliments you could give him. That's kind of funny. I can count on one hand the amount of people in the National Pro Wrestling who could cut this type of promo Alicia Edwards did and sounded more authentic. Tommy Dreamer is admittingly atoning for all his women and that he pile-drived in ECW by coming to Alicia Edwards' aid. TJP defeats Chris Bay. I have no idea who Chris Bay is. And, Chris Bay is that fucking black guy, their new version of fucking, Kofi Kingston. Let's see, Rohit Raju's sparkling dress shirt almost matched with the shiny and multicolored X Division Championship. Oh, that's kind of funny. Rohit Raju was supposed to be out there to antagonize these X Division contenders, but with heckles like "Who wants it more?" He was more of a source of inspiration than anything. Locker room talk with Wrestle House cast is what I mean. So let's see. Madison Rayne's line of questioning could only be described as pro Deonna Purrazzo. Kylie Rae talks about fitting with the same exuberance she talked about kittens and crayons. Brian Myers defeats Willie Mack. Let's see here. The logo on Brian Myers' t-shirt looked like it belonged on a park bench next to a real estate mogul. He really is a professional wrestler. That's fucking hilarious. Brian Myers and Willie Mack are seriously feuding over a handshake, and they have more than enough talent to pull it off. Here's to a shake my hand match at Bound for Glory. That's fucking hilarious. Willie Mack brilliantly used Myers' professional gimmick against him by forcing him into a match in the street clothes. Motor City Machine Guns versus the Rascals Impact Tag Team Championships. Boom. Given their pot smoking gimmick, I'm surprised the Rascals don't come out to reggae music. This match was a lock for being a high flying spot fest, but it was also anything but, with MCMG going old school and working over the leg. Taya Valkyrie defeats Tasha Skills. I have no idea who Tasha Skills is. Tasha Skills is that fucking, I think, that black chick, teamed up with, Kira Hogan, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Like I said, I haven't seen the show in a few weeks, so. Johnny Bravo was planning his wedding throughout this match, and I was praying he would do a cake tasting bit. It was hard to buy Taya Valkyrie crying out for help like her life was in danger while getting beaten up by a woman half her size. There was a moose segment alongside this former college coach who ended up being processed by EC3. It was fantastic, apparently. Then Eric Young versus Tommy Dreamer. Eric Young's mask could double as a legit lucha mask, and I think he should wrestle in it. For somebody known so much for his hardcore skill set, Tommy Dreamer delivers one hell of an elbow drop. Sometime a feud reminds you of ECW in embarrassing ways, but this reminds me of ECW for all the right reasons. Well, that's what the guy who was reviewing the thing said. And then, it just goes into football after that. But, I don't know, like I said, I wish I could be getting some Impact right now. But, I'm so behind on bills. And until I get more money, hopefully out of this podcast, which, by the way, if you want to help donate to this podcast, you can cash at me at the money symbol, Hippie Pimp, HIPPIPIMP. I would love to get some donations, and I'm actually going to possibly, instead of bringing my buddy Chad on, I don't want to jinx it, but I might do some stuff with Pat Kelly from the West Coast Wrestling Connection and Paragon Pro Wrestling and the Golf Guys Radio Show. We've been encouraging him to take his Golf Guys Radio Show on a podcast format. So we've just been talking a lot lately, and we might do some interviews together and see where it goes. So hopefully, I'll have some more stuff coming this way in the next few weeks, some more to talk about, and yeah. So let's get another break in before we come back with the closing segment, and yeah, see you when we get back.
So this is Greg Golden from the Greg Golden Band, Bizarre Guitar, in Reno, Nevada, and you're listening to Rock and Wrestling, Local 420. Those guys rock.
Batman, can somebody tell me what kind of a world we live in where a man dressed up as a bat gets all of my press? This town needs an enema.
Hey everyone, this is Joe V, formerly of Pro Wrestling Uncut and the West Coast Wrestling Connection. You're listening to Rock and Wrestling with my man, Cosmic Chris.
This is Cody TKO Smith. You are listening to Rock Wrestling and Local 420 with Captain Craziness Cosmic Chris. Stay tuned. And if you guys want to hear some of the best interviews, some of the best info, some of the best music, stay tuned. You're on the right channel already.
Hey, and we are back for this week's closing segment. Before I get into my shout-outs, I just want to say, hey, if there's any way you can help, and I don't know how, but right now, Washington, Oregon, and California are on fucking fire. If you know anyone in the LA area, in the Northern California area, or Portland area, you know, help people. Because right now, people are losing everything. It's this fucking wrath of God biblical fucking weirdness. And it's a huge, huge shit show and a huge storm. It's so weird because the West Coast is on fire and the East Coast is flooding. So it's so fucking weird seeing all these pictures. Like, you know, lately, and this is everywhere in the West Coast, the hazardous, unhealthy air levels are in the 300s, right? Oregon City the other day was 750. That's got to be fucking deadly. Like, what the fuck, man? And, you know, segueing into my shout-outs, speaking of Oregon City, my buddy Jeff Aiken is running for councilman, assemblyman, or something or other. I can't remember exactly. Because I just found out about it within the last week. So, you know, hey, man, vote for him because he's an awesome guy. I think he'll make a great person in office in Oregon City. It's his hometown. He loves it. That's where he's from. And Oregon City's awesome. I love Oregon City. It's nice. It's not in Portland proper. It's a nice suburb. It's right below 205 there. And so it's far enough away at the bottom as bottom can be in Portland. And it's really nice homespun town, man. Just a great place and really good on rent down there, too. That's another thing. If you're looking for cheap rent in the Portland area, Oregon City's got some great places, but you're going to be a half hour pretty much out of town. Like, you're not out of town at all, really. It's just the metro area. Like, you go out to Hillsboro, you're a half hour outside of Portland. You know, you go down to Woodland, or Woodburn, you're a half hour outside of Portland. You know, so it's just that way, you know, the way it is. You go up to Battleground, you're fucking 20, 25 minutes north of Portland, you know, Vancouver, etc. And so with that said, Jeff Aiken also has a great podcast that I've been listening to lately called Starfleet Leadership Academy. Give it a listen and, you know, hey, man, just tell him I sent you, man. because he's got that. I love listening to this guy talk about, and he breaks down all the episodes of Enterprise, Picard, etc. I'm sure Discovery, the original series, Star Trek Next Generation, DS9, etc., Voyager. And so it's really fun listening to him for like half hour, 45 minutes. And he sticks in all sorts of cool things. So little bites and edits and stuff that I really enjoy. Also, I want to show some love to the Z-Man, Brian Zane, who will hopefully be helping me with this interview that I'm doing with Split Persona, once again, from Bizarre Guitar's vault. And, yeah, show him some love. Watch his show, All W's Wrestling with Regret. And let's see. John and Chad, the two-man power trip of wrestling podcast. Check out Chad's new show, Declassified. That's a really good show that I'm enjoying. It's like 45 minutes to an hour where they're going back, kind of like Jeff is with the Star Trek, but they're going back on old Raw episodes and stuff like that and rehashing that. That's kind of really enjoyable. But hey, if you want to reach us, you can email us at rockandwrestlinglocal420@gmail.com. You can see us on Facebook, facebook.com/rockandwrestlinglocal420. Let's see, you can find us on any podcast site that hosts Podomatic, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast. And follow me on the Twitter. I'm on Snapchat now. I'm pretty sure it's my my username is Hippie Pimp, like all the other ones. But yeah, you can follow us on Instagram, Punching Baby Yoda, Twitter at Punching Baby Yoda without the G. And follow us on the social media. Check us out on YouTube. And this is Cosmic Chris saying, hey, if you can't be good, be bad, baby. Bye.